The hour of 10:15 having arrived, I will call the House Tax Committee to order. Officially, when we have a quorum, we're very fortunate today to have three bills before us. The first one on the agenda is House File 3840. So I will move 3840, and I will move the A1 amendment when we have a quorum, Mr. Chairman, Chairman Hoppe. So if you could please describe your bill as amended. That's your amendment, I hope?
It is an author's amendment, Mr. Chair, and thank you.
Should probably ask that first. So before we get started, Mr. Chairman, is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify on behalf of the bill? Is there anyone that wishes to testify with concerns thereof? Is the department, would the department like to testify on this one? Is the department here yet? Okay, so we'll check in with them when we get moving here. Welcome to the Tax Committee, sir. If you please present your bill as it will be amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We much appreciate being here, and you did a very nice job of summing up the bill. And I will, in the interest of saving time, turn it over to Mr. Johnson, who will explain it in more detail.
I love efficiency in government. Mr. Johnson, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Alex Johnson with Advantage Capital.
With who?
Advantage Capital.
Advantage Capital. Mr. Johnson, yes. Please present your testimony.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time today. I'm here to talk about HB 3840, which really tries to address the need of Minnesotans and their lack of affordable housing. You know, more and more, I think we see that companies are trying to thrive here in Minnesota, and not just in Minneapolis, St. Paul, but in greater Minnesota, and companies like Polaris and Marvin Window and DigiKey. And one of the real problems they're having is finding affordable housing for the people that that they would have working for them. And in many cases, they're busing them from other rural communities. So we've got a bill here which would try to address that need, to fill that gap of affordable housing, to lessen the burden that housing costs are put upon Minnesotans on a monthly basis. More and more, you see, I think in 2013, close to 500,000 lower-income households spent more than 30% of their budget on housing. If we can lower that burden, that puts more money in their pocket. That gives them more stability in the household. That means that kids can go to schools in better neighborhoods, and that helps the social fabric of the community as well. So what this this program would seek to do is, many of you I'm sure are familiar with, the federal government has two low-income housing tax credit programs. They have a 9% program, of which Minnesota has an allocation. That allocation is used up in full every year. It also has a 4% federal allocation, and that allocation is not used to its fullest ability. The reason for that is just, it's quite frankly, for developers, it's just not affordable at a 4% housing credit. So what we would seek to do is to match that federal credit with a state credit, a one-to-one match, which would be a 4% state credit, which would close that gap between the 4% and the 9% and provide over 500 units of affordable housing every year over the next 6 years, or over a six-year period. Now, that does not start, obviously, next year because it takes a while for these projects to begin, and the credits would not kick in until projects were completed. So that is, in essence, what we're trying to do. There is federal money on the table that we could bring to Minnesota. It would help solve this problem of affordable housing, and we think there is a great solution, and this is a solution which has been used in other places like Colorado to help address the need for to help lower and middle class Minnesotans and their housing needs. So at this time, I'd be happy to take any questions that you may have. Again, just another point on this. This would also create just over $100 million in syndication authority each year. So this isn't also just a great story with regard to affordable housing, but there is a jobs component to this as well.
Okay, thank you very much. We're not quite at a quorum. I think there's a little confusion. I see a lot of Ways and Means folks coming in. Ways and Means is in room 5, so you're going to see today, just you're going to see a lot of back and forth between the two committee meetings. And I believe I got the nod from Mr. Cummings that the department did not wish to weigh in on this bill at this time. If that's not correct, we will certainly hear from them. Questions for the author or the testifier? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think we really are in a situation where workforce housing is a concern there. My question is, I understand that this bill really gives the tax credit to companies that build the homes and so forth. But I remember back in the 50s and 60s when there was also the same shortage, a lot of companies built homes and stuff and duplexes and quadplexes and so forth and then rented it out. Is there any thought or is there any programs that would allow credits for companies that provided their own workforce housing at this point?
Mr. Johnson?
Yeah, not that I'm aware of, sir.
Representative Petersburg?
Thank you. It just seems like that might be another incentive if the industry and business needs housing for their employees. It seems like that makes a common sense. So just a comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Petersburg. Can we count Matt Dean as, or Representative Dean as a member?
Sure, let's do that.
We're one short of a quorum.
Mr. Chair?
I'll go get him.
Mr. Chair? On Ways and Means, if you could say, hey, come on up. Representative Hoppe.
I've been here a number of years now, and I've always wanted to be on the tax committee. Could I be for one day?
I think that counts, like a one-day bond. Okay, we're not quite at a quorum yet. And department, I saw Mr. Cummings in out there. I think there's another person for the department. I don't think the department.
You like it.
You're okay?
Yep.
You're okay. Okay.
I just have one addition to that question, and that's that while it's true that many of these companies are the ones who need the affordable housing, there are also many small businesses, I think, that would benefit from this as well. So there are many smaller communities where I think affordable housing could not be funded by the small businesses.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. No, I certainly understand that. I'm just saying, along with a lot of our transit issues too, where companies say, "Well, we need it," but I think we all need to be participating in with a skin in the game, and it just seems like it would be another avenue for getting additional housing out there for companies and others that could afford to do so for the investment. So, just a comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. And I think what we'll do is we'll do nothing. I'm extremely good at that. So we will come back to this when we have a quorum. And I don't, does members, any other questions? Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just thought that the per unit costs were a concern given the average cost of housing in many of these communities in greater Minnesota. And I think, you know, we need to kind of look at a balance. I think this is a challenge everywhere, that sometimes the per unit costs are sometimes approaching that of a single family home purchase in the area. You know, we've got limited housing dollars and we have housing shortages everywhere throughout the state, whether it's low income or marketplace or affordable. And I think we really need to look at, you know, some creative models that will allow these to continue to be affordable as time goes on. And I think there's some experiments out there in the marketplace that actually do allow for that affordability to be maintained over time. And I'm hoping we'll see some more creative approaches than just subsidized development what I see, at least in my community, is a lot of times, unless they're connected to a nonprofit developer, they tend to start out at a certain price point and then move on with the market. And that's fine if it's not subsidized by the public. But if it's subsidized by the public, I think we ought to look at this long term.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Any other questions from members? With that, we do have a quorum. I'll officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. Representative Simonson moves the minutes of April 12th. Any additions or corrections? Hearing or seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. I will now move that House File 3840 be officially before us. I will now move the H3840A1 amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the bill in shape the author would like. And now I'll move that House File 3840 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Hoppe Thiessen, that's very bipartisan.
We are both known for that, Mr. Chair.
You certainly are. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Okay, item next. We're very fortunate today to have before us Representative Rod Hamilton. Are we that fortunate?
I don't think so.
Okay, we'll go to the next item. And he's not always in Maine. So I will move House File 3660, the Drazkowski bill. Mr. Michael, could you tell us what we're doing here? Or maybe this is this Ms. Dalton.
I saw your mayor
Yeah. Okay, before we get going, I'm going to be moving the Drazkowski bill HF3660, but I want a full explanation. I bet Ms. Dalton thought she had time, huh? Okay, is there anyone, members and to the folks that are here, is there anyone that wishes to testify on behalf of House File 3660? We do have somebody. Okay, anybody wish to testify with concerns on 3660? There's no amendments. Does the department wish to weigh in on 3660, the Drazkowski bill, regarding sales and like? Not this time. Okay. So, Mr. Carlson, I'm going to have Ms. Dalton go through 3660, and then we'll take testimony, and we'll have. As many questions as members would like. No cost to address Drazkowski bill? On the revenue note?
Oh, I like that.
Ms. Dalton, House File 3660. What does that do?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what House File 3660 is, it provides what I would call an isolated and occasional sales tax exemption for lodging. If you essentially rent out all or a portion of a dwelling unit for 14 days or fewer in a calendar year, you would not be subject to either the sales tax or the local lodging tax. And the 14 days actually corresponds with a rental exclusion that already exists in the federal income tax law, so you don't have to report that as taxable income. If, like, you rent out your lake home for a weekend, that's not part of your federal taxable income. So it's kind of based on this, and this is somewhat to deal with the issue of the increased rental of this stuff through, like, Airbnb and other similar sites.
Okay, Mr. Carlson, or Representative Ansel, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I confess to not having done much homework on this bill prior to this hearing, but if this exemption would capture resorts, lake and outdoor recreational resort facilities, it would have some merit in my mind. But if it does not include them, it would be a problem.
Okay, Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, actually, what I would say what the bill's trying to do is to say there's a difference between somebody who just rents out their cabin or leases out their home for a weekend or a week during a calendar year, and somebody who's actually in the business of providing lodging as a business. It's very similar to, we have an isolated occasional sales tax exemption for somebody who holds a garage sale versus somebody who is actually in the business of selling used goods. Would a resort qualify for this? I would highly doubt it. I'm guessing all of their income gets reported for federal income tax purposes.
Representative Ansel.
Well, thank you for the explanation. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, then, that highlights my discomfort with this. Imagine a piece of lakeshore property on a lake where there are resorts. And the owner of the lakeshore property has a cabin or a home or whatever and gets into direct competition unfairly, in my view, with the resort down the shoreline by being able to offer a piece of private property for public use for a fee. And then the government would exempt all of that from lodging and sales taxes. I can see difficulties there.
And thank you, Representative Ancels. With this bill, what we're going to do is, I thought if there was no controversy, we could just kind of move it, but we're not going to do that because the author is not here at this point. So I want the author here to be able to talk about his bill a bit. But what I'd like to do is go to a little testimony on the bill, and we won't be acting on this at all, not even laying it over for possible conclusion until we've had a chance to hear from Representative Drazkowski. And as you know, we've got a Ways and Means Committee meeting going on, and so we're supposed to be down there. We're supposed to be up here. And so we won't do anything with this. We could lay it over until tomorrow because there's several member questions, and I want the author of the bill to be able to weigh in on this. Let's go before we go to member questions. Let's take some testimony, and then I have on my list Vice Chair Barrett, and your points are well taken, Representative Ancels, and so we won't be doing anything on this if we don't have the author here. Okay. Mr. Carlson, please state your name and who represents for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I think Mr. Quillis Michael first, and then I'll kind of amplify.
Certainly. Please state your name.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tony Quillis. I'm representing Hospitality Minnesota, which is the umbrella organization for the Minnesota Resort and Campgrounds Association, Minnesota Lodging, and Minnesota Restaurant Association.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Dan McElroy would love to have been here, Mr. Chairman. He loves to be in front of the House Tax Committee, but he is under the weather today, so I am his pinch hitter today. And I think Representative Ancels has answered some of the, or put forth some of the concerns that we had, Mr. Chairman. And with the explosion of the Internet and the sharing economy, if you will, and people holding out, whether it be condos in downtown Minneapolis or lakeshore homes, it's the level playing field argument, and whether or not we have to pay taxes and who has to meet up to meeting certain codes, whether it be at the Department of Health or the Department of Revenue, Mr. Chairman. So I just wanted to let those and get those on record for Hospitality Minnesota and turn it over to Mr. Carlson for a little bit more in-depth concerns.
Okay, Ms. Dalton, is this kind of like Uber for houses?
Mr. Chair, yes, it is, and it is actually an issue that a number of states and local governments are dealing with right now. And there are the state of Vermont has actually enacted legislation that is identical to what is in the Drazkowski bill. Others states have used Portland, Oregon uses a 7-day exemption provided you don't advertise through a platform. Some states, such as West Virginia, and Georgia, basically apply the exemption based on how many rooms you are renting out. And then other states have been taking the tack of requiring third-party vendors like Airbnb to collect on behalf of all of its clients. And Oregon and I believe Pennsylvania have been looking at that. So there are lots of ways of dealing with it, but it is really kind of dealing with the lodging version of the Uber cab situation.
Okay, Mr. Carlson, and members, again, we're not going to, there's more to this than what I originally realized, so we're not going to be acting on this until we've heard from the author one way or the other. Please state your name and who represents for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Joel Carlson, I'm here on behalf of the community of Minnesota Resorts, and I've watched this issue develop over a long number of years as it relates to the issue Representative Ancels mentioned with vacation home rentals, Airbnb, and how we achieve tax fairness among different types of lodging property. And as I first read the bill, it looked to me, and I kind of agree, that the bill before you simply codifies the exemption that is in federal law for the 14 days or under. That is not a taxable event. You don't even have to report the income that you receive from those 14 days as income. and it's not a taxable event. But the question becomes, how does the state treat this? And the Explore Minnesota Tourism had a lengthy task force about 4 years ago to look at the tax implications and local implications of vacation home rentals. And the information we had at that point is that the Department of Revenue felt that any lodging under 30 days was a taxable event, regardless of 14, 12, any days. This would kind of pick up the federal exemption, and other states have done it for different reasons. And I've done a little research on this, and Georgia in particular went to 15 days, and the math on that goes like this. The University of Georgia football game 6, Georgia versus Florida weekend 2, the Masters week of 7, which gives you 15 days, and that's how they arrive at 15 days in Georgia. So other states have tackled this in a different way, but what we would like to get to is a point where you do have a bright line, because we have an unfairness that's happening right now between lodging properties where people rent out their property far in excess of 14 days. They rent out property that they don't live in that is required by the federal statute, and they are not subject to state or local taxation or local lodging taxation. And that is our problem with the unfairness that we have right now. So the points that Representative Anzell makes is absolutely correct, and it's what kind of we found in this task force, that there is a broad range of properties that are being rented on a daily, weekly basis, far in excess of 14 days, that fall outside of the tax code right now. A mechanism to clarify that we think would be helpful, whether this is the exact model or not, we haven't really opined yet, but something needs to be done to make it clear and fair. People aren't really uptight about you being gone for a week and renting your cabin out for a week. That's not the problem. But what is really going on in the vacation rental business is the cabin that is rented out every single week and not being licensed, not paying sales tax, not paying lodging tax, and being able to be in competition with other tourism properties in an unfair basis. That's our concern. And to the extent this moves us towards tax fairness, I think we're willing to work with it. If it moves us further away where it just makes a bigger exemption, then we have greater concerns. I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. I think I've got a question, I think, for Mr. Michael. So this is interesting to me, because so you could rent your home out and you don't even have to declare any federal income tax or state income tax. So when the Ryder Cup comes to, are there any houses for sale around Chaska, Chaska? This could be a really good deal, because they get a lot of money for those. So, Mr. Reichel, help me out on the federal state income taxation in this situation.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, yes. The federal income tax rules, which Minnesota follows, says that if you have your residential property, in the classic case, would be a vacation home, and you rent it out for no more than 14 days, the income from that, you don't have to report it. It's not, and it's sort of, the IRS has done this as a way to eliminate the nuisance of trying to, you know, track small amounts of income. And of course, the quid pro quo of that is you cannot take cost recovery, or what, you know, we usually refer to as depreciation, on that property. So you're basically, it's just the income is not taxable. And Minnesota, because we conform to the federal rules, has always followed that. And so, yes, if you own a home near, you know, a great golf course where they're doing, you know, the Masters or the PGA or something like this, and you're renting out your dwelling for, you know, some of these things go for $10,000 or $20,000
a week.
It's, you know, for an event like that, you know, it's a great income tax benefit. What this bill, though, addresses is how do we apply the sales tax in that context? And the sales tax law now has no exemption at all. So technically, you do owe the sales tax on that rental. And I think what Mr. Carlson's point is that is rarely enforced, and that there are many people who are using these these platforms, Airbnb being the big national one, but there have been platforms like this that have been around for many years, renting out for way in excess, perhaps, of the 14 days and not collecting the sales tax. What this bill does is simply say, look, we're not going to go after you for if you're complying with the federal. It doesn't, I think what Mr. Carlson is saying to you, it would be nice if the state had a way to start enforcing the sales tax on some of these people who are quasi, if not directly, in the business of, you know, essentially providing, selling lodging in excess of the 14 days. And it may well be that the IRS or the Department of Revenue is successfully going after them and getting the income tax on that, but that's probably questionable too. Who knows?
Thank you. Representative Drazkowski, a very interesting bill. Would you like to present it to the committee?
Since he wasn't here, I want to let him know I didn't testify against it yet.
Does
that mean he's going to testify for it, Mr. Chair?
Chair Drazkowski, we've had a robust discussion on your bill to this point. Very interesting the way current law is and what your bill is trying to do. So if you could just, we've had a full discussion of it, but if you could just kind of make your presentation on, or we weren't going to do anything with it until, if you weren't here today, we're just going to lay it over till tomorrow. But you're here now, so could, Ms. Dalton went through some of the issues here, but if you could make some comments on your thoughts of your bill, and so Representative Drazkowski moves House File 3660, so we have it before us. So we had all that discussion on it. It wasn't actually before us, was it? It is now.
Thank you,
Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I'm sorry I missed the discussion, but they had another lively discussion on Ways and Means. I have a constituent. He wasn't able to be here today, but he has been finding himself. He's somebody who participates in Airbnb, and I have not ever done Airbnb, but I know there are people who do it. It seems to me to be, Representative McDonald's aware of it, similar to Uber for cars, I think we're seeing a structural change in how people operate and do commerce with the internet, being in reality, of course, you know, the institutions that are currently before us that have evolved over time probably feel threatened by those. And so what we see and have seen, one of my constituents anyway, has seen that the local city is even getting into the point now, and I think they had used the lodging tax as one of the examples and one of the levers, if you would, around the action that they are taking against his constituent, even going to the point of suggesting that his property now needs to be zoned as a commercial property because of his involvement with Airbnb. So it kind of led to the query of, well, what do we currently do with Airbnb and people who participate in that, both, and Ms. Dalton and I have had several conversations, both with federal and state income tax and then also with the lodging tax. And so this bill seems to be in order to protect those people from, in this case, it was an overzealous city that was coming forward and attempting to, certainly identifying his activity as an Airbnb person to not only get into his wallet for taxation, Mr. Chair, but even to the point of threatening legal action in terms of rezoning and some other things. I don't completely understand it, but the intent of the bill is to provide people some protection from local governments who, in their zeal to secure even more tax dollars from every place they can find them sometimes, protect them to engage in this activity without that worry. So that was the intent of the bill, and I wanted to bring it before us to have a discussion, not any particular idea on where it would end up or what it might look like, but I think that at least the initial design of it makes sense with the 14-day parallel with the federal income tax exemption. So if that's helpful, that's all I really have to say about the bill, Mr. Chair.
That is helpful, and just to bring you up to speed here, we were going to be hearing things without authors here with taking no action until the author would be here. So thanks for that description. And Mr. Carlson, you might want to talk to him. He's got a few thoughts on And then we had Mr. Quillis was quite harsh to your bill, I thought, kind of out of line. But
I could feel heat from downstairs, Mr. Chair.
You could. No, mm-hmm. No, he was very, very good, as he always is, but expressed some concerns from the folks he's representing in a very kind way. And then we had some questions from, I think, Representative Ann Sells. And so we're going to go into questions of the author and maybe Mr. Carlson, Mr. Quillis. Do you want to, after you made those comments about his bill, can you sit next to him, please? And then again, was there anyone else that had that either wants to testify from the audience on behalf of or with concerns? Okay, why don't you come down, Mr. Egger, and then let's hear from Mr. Egger. Then I have a list here of members. We'll get into member questions. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Paul Egger, Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Realtors.
Welcome
representing,
to the committee, sir.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair, I hadn't intended to testify today, but just based on the discussion and getting a better sense of the bill, I just wanted to get on the record that this is also an issue that our members are very interested in generally. We were also part of the task force that Mr. Carlson referenced. I think it was a little bit longer than 4 years ago because it was before my, it was about eight. Thank you, Representative Erickson. And we have different perspectives on that issue. We certainly, our members are very interested in preserving the ability for property owners, for homeowners to be able to do with their property things like rent it out for periods of time. And I understand that we're going to have differences of opinion on what the appropriate use of that ability is, but we're glad that Representative Drazkowski brought this issue forward. We are starting to hear from our members concerns about maybe trying to put the genie back in the bottle on the sharing economy, and I just, A, I don't know if that's possible, but B, I think we need to have a real thoughtful discussion about, you know, having that balance that that was discussed earlier, and making sure that part of that discussion is preserving the ability of homeowners to continue to take advantage of the opportunity to provide lodging in situations where lodging is called for. So just wanted to get on the record, Mr. Chair, that we'd like to be part of this discussion with the other stakeholders, and that there's certainly a lot of different sides and interests involved with this issue.
Thank you, Mr. Egger. And this is an interesting bill, and it is something we are going to have to address at some point here, one way or the other. So I guess today we get the discussion going a bit further. Okay, members' questions. Was the department at this point your... Not this time. Okay. Vice Chair Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Drazkowski. It's a good bill. You're obviously looking out for the taxpayer, trying to keep their taxes as low as possible, so I appreciate that. The question I have is for Ms. Dalton, and I'm not sure if staff or Mr. Michael would be able to answer the question, but I know a couple days ago there was an article in the paper that said that because the Super Bowl is coming to town, state of Minnesota would reap millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars in benefit, you know, $330 million or so. Thousands of people are going to come here. They're going to spend thousands and thousands of dollars. If this bill were to go through, would that, you know, when that money doesn't show up to the extent that the advocates think it will they blame this bill if it passes as being the source of the reduction in revenue that the state had expected prior to the event happening? And
Ms. Dalton, or would that depend on if the tax bill passes this year? Ms. Dalton, to the question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barrett, I would not like to basically comment on who somebody might blame for something. I do think that you want to think about the fact that for many of us, it's going to be very hard to find. I mean, this is very similar to when the state passed the exemption for personal, there's an exemption in law right now where you can buy up to $770 worth of taxable goods over the internet in a calendar year without owing sales tax, and it's because we can't find those people. I mean, it's very difficult to find those people, and I think that's part of what this issue is addressing is, you know, who's going to go out and check who is renting their condo in downtown. Now, for the Super Bowl, maybe the city will go down and check who is renting their condos in downtown. Minneapolis to find out what they're losing in lodging taxes. But generally speaking, this is a very hard thing to enforce.
Vice Chair Barrett.
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Chair Draskowski.
Thank you. So, Representative Barrett, thanks for the question. If I could take that blame, I'd be very happy to, because if I can be responsible for any unit government getting decreased revenues, it would be a wonderful thing for me to carry with me.
Vice Chair Barrett.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Draskowski. You're right. There are two ways to look at it. Thank you.
Chair Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Draskowski, it's an interesting conundrum. You've got a very strong perspective on, people who owe taxes shouldn't have to pay the taxes that's embedded in this bill and in your introduction to the bill. But I've heard the president, founder, CEO, whatever his title is, of Airbnb stating unequivocally Airbnb parcels should pay the taxes that are due in the community that they live in. Very different approach. How do you respond to the guy who founded and runs Airbnb, who thinks that people should pay the taxes that they owe?
Chair Draskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Dabney. That's a very good question, and I understand the same, that the company does pay that. And they are very upfront about paying that, and they have a strong history of that, and I don't know how long the history's been, probably not real long. But what we're talking about here is local governments bothering homeowners within their jurisdiction who are operating in ways that they want to. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. And I don't know exactly how those dollars are remitted between Airbnb and, person X who's operating, or selling rental time at their home. But I do know that these taxes, at least in this particular situation, were used as levers or as mechanisms by which the city government was pursuing this individual owner beyond what you would expect them to do. And actually going to the point, as I mentioned, of attempting, that there's a lawsuit going on and a lot of things transpiring out of this. I don't have the full grasp of those, but I think we need to have the discussion, and I think we need to draw a line somewhere.
Thank you. And Chair Dabney, you still have the floor. Ms. Dalton, basically this bill, though, conforms with federal law, is what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
We're attempting to.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, federal law deals with income taxes. This is dealing with sales and lodging taxes. It is using the federal law as a basis to make sure that we're treating them consistently for all of these taxes. Some advantage to doing that is you can't go to an income tax form and find these people who are evading the sales tax, because the sales tax isn't, this income isn't being shown up on their income tax form. So, as I said, part of this is kind of also an administrative issue, is how do you find these people to collect
I think
tax?
It might be one issue if we have the folks that are actually doing it for the 7 or 14 days and no more. But then, as Mr. Carlson was saying, that's not everybody does it.
Right.
Okay. Chair Dabney.
Just a comment off of the Chair Draskowski's response. I do get concerned when legislation is introduced to impact a situation where a lawsuit is ongoing at that time, that it seems like the legislative branch interfering with the judicial branch, and I'm usually more comfortable if we let that process play out, get a conclusion, and then we respond. So just a comment. Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Chair.
You, Chair
thank you,
Chair. Representative Ansaltz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think an argument could be made that homeowners interested in doing this are very much interested in not being found. because by virtue of not being found, they get an opportunity to avoid paying taxes. And who wants to pay taxes? But this bill will give the opportunity in law to people to avoid taxes. And using federal conformity on the income tax side so that citizens can avoid compliance on lodging and sales taxes just doesn't feel fair to me. And my question for the author is, assuming that the community of Wanamingo has a motel, how would the motel owner feel if we should pass a bill such as this?
Representative Drazkowski, does Wanamingo have a hotel?
I don't know, but there's a dog named Wanamingo.
Wanamingo.
Mm-hmm. No, it does not have a motel, Mr. Chair.
But if it did.
Yeah. I mean, I would think it'd be similar to some of the, Representative Van Zyls, to some of the discussion you probably heard from Mr. Carlson earlier before me. There's going to be resistance to this bill from people who are in that industry. It's, you know, we see protectionism and fencing, and many of the bills that are coming before us have come before us in the past, will become for us this session, and will come before us in sessions to come. Everybody's here, not everybody, but a lot of people are here pushing their elbows out and looking out for their space, and that's some of the jockeying that goes on. That's why you're elected to be here.
Representative Van Zyls. Kenyon Wanamingo Knights.
Very good, Mr. Chair. Do you have a hat?
We didn't look it up. Not yet, but I'm going to get one. I hope. Questions for the author? Chairman Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What is the present status of family renting a house or a room or two and throwing in lodging for a wayward child that comes home for after graduation but needs a place to live? Is that 14-day circumstance cover them? Or?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, I think that's not really an issue. I have a feeling most kids who come back are there for more than 30 days, and so they would be exempt from lodging tax because lodging tax only applies to leases and rentals of 30 days or less.
And they could be there until age 26.
Or longer.
Chair Earhart. Okay, Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, over the last couple of months, I've watched the Duluth City Council struggle with this issue. And it reminds me how thankful I am not to be on a city council, first of all. But it's a challenge, and this is a very real thing in our community for certain. And I've watched this over the years as they have dealt with, you know, B&Bs and other different types of short-term housing, and how we deal with it with respect to our local housing code and, you know, fees and licenses and inspections and et cetera. But what I've noticed about the discussion revolving around this particular topic is that there are actually people out there that are willingly coming forward and saying, you know, what can I do, what should I do, what do I need to do to comply with the rules and the regulations because I'm concerned about the liability. And I can see it from that perspective, in that if you open up your home and you rent out a room in your home or a portion of your home for a couple of days and something were to happen, there, of course, is a liability question that could be addressed through insurance. But there's also the question about, you know, did the property owner follow the local regulations, codes, and rules? So I totally understand where you're coming from. And, you know, if I would just encourage us that as we go forward, I hope that there's continued dialogue. But if you're considering the inclusion of this in any sort of a later bill, Mr. Chair, that perhaps a better way to accomplish it would be to give the local units of government the option, rather than kind of making it a statewide mandate, because I think that this discussion is at vastly different levels depending on which community you go into.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Simons. You bring up a very good point. I had my insurance hat on there for a second. It does. I'm going to check into that, because if you have somebody in your home for enumeration, they're paying you for however many days, how are those folks covered? How are you covered on your liability? Now you've made it into a business. That's a whole different ballgame on the homeowner's perspective. That's not for this committee, but I am going to follow up on that, because I don't know if there'd be coverage if something happened. If they, you know, in Duluth, you know, in January, it could be a little ice. They could slip and come back on you. So interesting. Okay. Other questions for members? Representative Drazkowski, you've certainly got the discussion going.
Mr. Chair.
You may wish to talk to Mr. Quillis's folks, Carlson's folks, and others. Very interesting bill. So with that, I will...
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Carlson.
Can I just respond to one question here? Because I don't want Representative Drazkowski to believe that we're sitting here trying to fence out competition. That's not our intent. In fact, I kind of said we might be okay with this bill if we draw draw the bright line and make sure that people that are renting out their cabin for a week, and that's not our concern. But we also want fair competition, and you know, I'm well aware of VRBO and Airbnb, and they do remit sales and lodging taxes, and that's the concern. Is I don't want to draft. I would like to not have this bill drafted in such a way that it enhances or continues the unfairness for people that are in the legitimate business of renting out lodging. Let me give you an example, and it's a real one. There's no definition of 14 days. I can rent out my cabin pretty much every weekend in the summer. I only rent it on Friday night. Saturday and Sunday are free.
Are you saying the private sector can outfox government?
I'm saying that we genuinely want to see some controls or some guardrails put on this, so that lodging establishments, taking local zoning out of the issue, you know, and whether or not they are supposed to be operating there, but we'd like to see a brighter line drawn so that there is a fairness on the tax question. And I don't like to disagree with Representative Simonson, but I hope you will have a statewide standard. Trying to make these properties become local taxpayers to every jurisdiction that may or may not have a lodging tax, which are collected locally, and a local sales tax and a state sales tax. I think a uniform state policy is the best direction to go, and I'd like you to encourage that. Even though I get the local control on the use, I would like to see you not go to a local option on the collection of the tax. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Any further questions from members? Representative Simon.
To that point, Mr. Chair, since my name was mentioned, but sure. Clearly, that's my first choice. I agree with you in that respect, that we should have a statewide. Well, our law currently is statewide and applies to all jurisdictions. So my first choice would that we don't pass this bill. Second choice is that if you do, at least you consider local jurisdictions.
Thank you, Mr. Simonson. Last word, Chair Drazkowski.
No, thank you for the discussion, Mr. Chair. Really no last words, and been a good discussion, even the part I missed.
It was
probably the best part.
Yeah. So Chair Drazkowski renews his motion that House File Number 3660 be laid for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Chair Drazkowski, and for everyone that testified and members. Item next and item last, I will move. We're very fortunate today to have Chair Hamilton with us. I will move House File 3841. Are there amendments? Chair Hamilton, are all the amendments yours?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay, then I will move House File 3841. I will now move the H3841A1 amendment. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Now I will move the A16-1061 amendment. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the bill in the shape the author would like. Chair Hamilton, if you could please present your bill.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the Workforce Housing Tax Credit Proposal tax bill. You know, I've traveled up to War Road down to Worthington, the area in which I represent, and we do have a shortage of workforce housing. Mr. Chairman, I do have Mr. Dorman here to walk us through the bill, and I believe we have two testifiers as well.
Wonderful. Okay, to get ourselves set up here, is there anyone other than Chairman Dorman? Once the chair, always the chair. Chairman Mr. Dorman, wish to testify on behalf of the bill? Okay, so we have a few folks who wish to testify in favor of the bill. Anyone that wish to testify with concerns? Does the department wish to weigh in at this point?
Not at this time.
Not at this time. Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Okay, so with that, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir, and we welcome you to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm happy to be before the committee. My name is Dan Dorman, the Executive Director of the Greater Minnesota Partnership. I'm going to walk you through the bill, and since you've probably heard too much from me anyway this session, I won't talk about why it's needed, but I'll leave that up to the testifiers. I think they can do a better job of that than I can anyway.
So. Welcome to the committee, sir.
There you go. Mr. Chair, members, the bill is that you have before you would create a workforce housing tax credit, not permanently, but for a three-year period in order to try to stimulate the market of what we'd like to call workforce housing in particularly greater Minnesota. It's limited. It's targeted in some ways. And you can see that on the first page of the bill, open to cities of 1,000 or greater. They have to be in greater Minnesota. And if you look at lines 1.22 to 1.24, this gets at the point that we're looking at communities that haven't had true market rate housing built. A lot of our communities have seen affordable housing or subsidized housing, but not true market rate housing. So that section addresses that. The exception to the city rule can be found on lines 2.3 through 2.5. What that is targeted at is Cook County. Cook County is, if you're not familiar with it, somewhat unique in the fact that most people do not live in a city. It's they have their challenges for housing, and they made a very compelling case that they should have maybe a little more latitude than other counties of the state, and no one so far has objected to that. As you walk through it, it talks lines 2.6 through 2.11 addresses the fact that we're looking at things that aren't limited by income, like a traditional low-income housing development would be. One of the amendments that you just passed, but I'd like to highlight it for a moment, found in lines 2.24 through 2.25. The 250,000 was stricken and 175,000 inserted. We've looked at some projects that have happened in greater Minnesota, and we really thought that we could reduce that cap. We want to make sure that we're not trying to build luxury housing or something. We're trying to build good quality housing directed at moderate income folks in greater Minnesota. So that's how we try to limit the bill. It's done there. One thing that, Mr. Chair, as this moves along, hopefully as it does move along, that I think we need to clarify, and if you read the House research summary, we want to make it clear that the intent is that no project receive more than 40% of a credit. One way to get about that might be to change the number on 2.27 to 60%, but I think, Mr. Chair, it's a conversation that perhaps you could have with the House research staff and that's how to do that, but that is kind of what the intent of it is. Lines 2.3 to 2.33 start to look at how it functions, and basically it's up to a 40% tax credit of no more than $1 million. The tax credit is designed to be, you could either use it yourself if you have that large of a Minnesota income tax liability, or sell it. A version of this, just for your information, Mr. Chair and members, did pass in the Senate last year with refundable language. That certainly works for us as well. Perhaps it could be both. Lines 3.1 through 3.5 look at the dollar amount, $15 million in 2016 and $30 million after that. The line on 3.25 I think is an important one, 3.25, 3.6. What that addresses is we didn't want to see one project gobble up all the credit, so it would limit that a particular project not take up more than 40% of the funds. We're really trying to get projects built in more than one community would be the goal. And just on a walkthrough of the bill, Mr. Chair, that's how it would function, how it would work. I'd be happy to answer any other questions that you might have, or step aside and let the testifiers testify.
I think we'll have member questions for Mr. Dorman at this point. Then we'll bring up other testifiers. Mr. Dorman, on the A16-1061 amendment that we adopted to go from 250 to 175, that does not affect the revenue notice at all? You're just lowering the amount per?
That's correct.
So that, okay.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Dorman or Mr. Hamilton at this point? Representative Ansells.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I'd like to know who the businesses are and the communities that are needing this, who are obviously complaining that they can't attract workers because of housing. I'm wondering if the pay scale for workers in those businesses might not be a factor. I'm wondering why the taxpayers are being asked in this legislation to subsidize this. And I would remind you, Representative Hamilton, a little over 100 years ago, when iron ore was discovered on the Mesabi and the mining companies owned by Rockefeller and Carnegie and folks like that came to the Mesabi to exploit the ore in order to exploit the workers by encouraging immigration from Southern Europe, they built the houses. We had a workforce shortage and a housing shortage, but the mining company built the houses in order to secure the labor to extract the unbelievable wealth from the region. So how does this square up, and why should the taxpayers be required or be asked to participate in this way?
Chair Hamilton?
Well, when you first started sharing that with me, the thought that came to mind was that song, Sold My Soul to the Company Store. That was the first thing that came to mind. However, what we're wanting to do here, and the other thing that you talked about is are these low-paying jobs. You know, I'm thinking about the city of Jackson, where we have a large tractor manufacturer, and these are high-paying jobs. These are good-paying jobs. We simply don't have the houses for the individuals. And what we're wanting to do is be able to get these starter homes, because individuals will move into a community and they're new to that area and they're not sure if they want to invest in as far as building a new home or not, so they're looking for rental units. And then the long-term intent, once they get there and they get established there and they put their children through schools and whatnot, then they can move on and hopefully build a house. But again, we need to get something started in order to get people there and attract them there. We have people that are busing from Sioux Falls, South Dakota right now to the city of Worthington to work over there, because we simply don't have housing.
Mr. Dorman?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, a couple things to add, because they're great questions, and I think they've come up at along the way several times. You could make many of the same claims about why is the state involved in low-income housing? Because if it's an income problem, people ought to be paying more. You have that same problem there, and yet the state, I think, in the last couple of years has been putting in close to $100 million a year into low-income housing. So I think that the same questions are there, and I wish that wasn't needed either. But what I can tell you is that it and you'll hear it from the testifiers that are going to come forward, it isn't necessarily an income problem. We hear about it. One of the people who testifies is the superintendent of Alberta School District. It's a very difficult thing for them. It's starting to be a problem for recruitment, but I'll let them I'll let them tell that story. But I do think that it's there's a market problem. There's a market problem when, if you look at the project that was done in Roseau using the state grant, when the developers took that project to the bank and tried to get financing, a $5 million project, the appraisal came back at about $1.8 million because there's no comparables. That's a problem. It's a problem to help get these things off the ground. In a community like Albert Lea, no different than Jackson or many others in greater Minnesota, we haven't seen true market housing, market rate housing, built in decades. And that is starting to hurt our economy. And if you look at why is that important to even people in the metropolitan area, take a look at the report that Moody's provides the state on a quarterly basis about their bond rating. One of the concerns they have in there is the growing two economies, that there is a difference in the growth rate of the what's happening in the metropolitan area and in greater Minnesota. So I think it's important for a variety of reasons, but that would be my short answers to that. But I think the tester buyers can do a much better job than just I can of explaining why this is necessary and who it's important to.
Thank you. Representative Ansel, you still have, you're okay. Good. Okay. And you mentioned, Representative Ansel, some of the areas of the state. I'm hearing Thief River Falls, Roseau, you know, different in Jackson, Worthington, different areas around the state. Now, members, we do have probably three bills that kind of address this issue. The one in House File 848 that was passed last year sitting in conference committee because we didn't get a tax bill passed. That's sitting in conference. So the issue is there. The issue is currently there. I think that was the Fabian bill. Fabian bill?
Yes.
And then we've got the Hamilton bill, and we've heard the Hoppe bill. Different approaches to some real situations that we need to be looking at. Chairman Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So my crib sheet says credit is not refundable, cannot be carried over, but is transferable to other taxpayers. How does that work?
Maybe Ms. Manzi or Mr. Dorman? Mr. Dorman?
Mr. Chair, I'll take a stab at it, and if I'm wrong, I hope somebody will correct me, but that is patterned a little bit, or not a little bit, but after some of the low-income housing tax credits that flow from the federal government. But there are a variety of ways to do that. This would make them saleable, so you go out and sell them. One of the weaknesses in that approach is the fact that you're going to have to give up some of the value of this to the financier, whoever that buys it. I would encourage the community to strongly consider making them refundable. That would take care of that, or perhaps both. But there are several ways in which that can be done. I believe that's patterned after the low-income side.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, this money would come out of the general fund for the credits, right? Are they refundable, not refundable, and cannot be carried over?
Mr. Dorman?
Is that the flow of it?
Mr. Chair, yes. It would be like any other tax expenditure.
Well, then why do you make this only for greater Minnesota? Because effectively, the metro area, counted out the seven county metro area where 67% roughly of the flow of income from the state that we spend the general fund money on comes from the seven county metro area, but we have that same need here. Some areas, some cities are not able to have workforce housing because the land is too expensive. That's not the case in your area. But it also exists in the metro area, yet we're going to be paying for your thing that we also need. So I think that's kind of an injustice to the... this is a ploy for our greater Minnesota to get at our funds that we're putting into the pot again.
Mr. Dorman?
Sure. Mr. Chair, great question. I maybe take a little broader look at who pays what, because I think we all pay at different rates, and I don't think that it's homogeneous. Gee, these guys in greater Minnesota pay this and metro guys pay that. I think that many of the communities, particularly in the urban core, look a lot like greater Minnesota City. So I think that you know, that broad brush, it's us versus them, I don't think is quite a complete picture. But I would also say that the economies are different. I went to the report that Moody's puts out, and I read with interest a column that the Mr. Moon, the new head of the Minnesota Chamber, put out that highlighted that fact that the metropolitan area seems to be thriving. It's one of the most thriving metropolitan, according to that the article, one of the most thriving metropolitan areas in the country. Yet he noted that that isn't so true in greater Minnesota. There is a difference, and I think that we all have, if you believe in the one state philosophy, we have an interest in making sure that we have vital communities throughout the state, not just in the Seven County metro area. In fact, I don't think you want us living in Edina. We're just kidding you there, but we don't want everybody to be forced to move into the Seven County metropolitan area. I think we want a vital state.
Gerhardt, are you doing as I'm doing, having flashbacks to 2001-2002? Chair Earhart.
No, I just, Mr. Chairman, I just was mentioning the fact of the huge amount of money that comes out of that Seven County metro area to support the rest of the state. 67.7%.
Chair Earhart, I have always thanked you for that.
I know that. It's the same way, Mr. Chairman, on that ballpark.
Yes, that was...
You're welcome.
I thank you. I thank you. Earhart, you
well, I think I made my point. Why don't you give us some breaks, too, instead of you taking all our money and then not giving us the breaks?
Well, Mr. Chairman...
Chair Hamilton.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, you know, we give you our children. Our children graduate and they move up to the cities for employment. And what we're trying to do is reverse that trend. And we need to reverse that trend. We need houses back there. We need businesses back there and infrastructure investment, et cetera, and investment in our schools. I was in Health and Human Services with Representative Brad Finstead a few years ago, and we were arguing about rate increases for nursing homes. And I said, look, if you don't properly fund the rural areas, Brad Finstead and I will be the only two left out there. Everybody's moving to the cities. So this is just one other way that we can reverse that trend. Our biggest export, if you will, are our children, and they're going to the cities, the metropolitan areas. So we're trying to invest in business. We're trying to invest in houses and education, et cetera, so that we can reverse that trend.
Representative Ansels, thank you for not weighing in on this one. I appreciate it.
Peace.
From the northern
peace
perspective.
In the
peace in the valley. Peace in the valley. We're going to go Representative Loeffler, and then we're going to I'm sorry, Chair Earhart.
No,
you're okay.
Happened.
Okay, we're going to go to Representative Loeffler. Then we have some folks that traveled some distance. So if the folks that have traveled some distance that are going to testify and haven't traveled that far, Mr. Carlson, why don't we all kind of gather down here so I can kind of manage. Is Keith here, too, or not here? Okay, your brother's not here? Okay. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And these bills, as far as I can tell, have no targeting at all. And at least on the handout that comes out, it would provide, you know, about 1,000 units of housing for $45 million. I mean, that's a pretty limited amount for a lot of what is a big amount of money in a lot of committees in this place. It works out to, if my math is correct, about a $222 a month subsidy with no income limits. We have information in the handout that says, you know, Roseau was mentioned that 30% of the households in Roseau earn over $75,000. That's more than the median income across this whole state. And so I'm really concerned that this bill is really going to just benefit a bunch of investors who'll get some nice tax breaks, and that where there's no guarantee that any of this will be targeted to the areas of greatest need. And we've got to stop this crazy Greater Minnesota Metro, and like they're two very different worlds. Quite honestly, the fastest growing economy in Minnesota is Mankato and North Mankato. You're losing your kids not as much to the cities anymore, but to the regional centers in Greater Minnesota, whether that's Duluth or St. Cloud or some of those sorts of things, and they're doing okay. I believe that we do need to help what Steve Sviggum taught me to say is deep rural, which is the small towns that aren't the regional centers that are struggling to attract workers and businesses. But this has no targeting. So all of this could go to Rochester, which has DMC and other advantages. It just feels to me like we've got a goal here that will benefit some investors, but really doesn't necessarily have the targeting that will even get to the goals that the authors have presented. And $222 a month subsidy, I think I'd rather give it to that poor working family and give them the freedom to find a place in the market. And I think the market would step up if they had that with them. rather than just a particular building, a particular developer who's best at playing the game and knows how to play the tax incentives game and may or may not be connected in the small towns that you're talking about.
And Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Lauffer. To that point, then we'll go to some witnesses here. But I would say once again, members, this is one of several bills we're looking at, so hopefully we can put a deal together that addresses concerns of all members. Chair Hamilton, to that point, then we're going to go to testimony.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Lauffer, this is targeted. This is targeted. It's designed for communities that haven't had growth. And so the two examples that you gave in Mankato and Rochester would most likely not qualify the way the language is written. With that, Mr. Chairman, the testifiers, to the testifiers.
Okay. Representative Lauffer, since you referred to your question.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't think it actually has sufficient targeting, and the real beneficiary is the investor rather than the, in many ways. And I just think there could be some more creative solutions here than using the tax code in this way. I'm sympathetic to communities who are going through economic change and trying to figure it out.
And thank you, Representative Lauffer, for that. This is a work in progress, and hopefully we can put something together if we ever get a tax bill passed. Okay. So that I'm looking at three folks here. Okay. Okay. So if either one of you could please introduce yourself for the record.
Yes. Thank you, members of the chair and the committee. Thank you for this opportunity. I'm Chad Adams, the city manager of Albert Lea. And this is an issue that we've been dealt with for particularly the last 5 years, if not dating back to the last 25 years when our last market rate development was created up until very recently here. I've had the good fortune of working with a lot of southeastern Minnesota communities, both large and small, who view this as one of the top priority goals to try to attract workforce for our future. The city of Albert Lea about a year and a half ago conducted a housing needs assessment that demonstrated very clearly that we need about 100 units of market rate rentals, and that's more in the range of the the $900 plus range, with a substantial amount of need for the $700 to $900 range. We simply don't have the developers to supply for the demand. And we have actually received financial pro formas from developers. We've sat down with them and worked with our financial advisors. And there's typically a $400,000 to $800,000 gap on 24 units. So it's significant, and the city, the county, and the school district, and Mr. Funk will speak to this as well, have all teamed together to provide some of those matching funds to try to bridge that gap. Where we're having a problem is that the developer is not able to bridge that gap. We're looking forward to this utilization of this tax credit as one tool to help bridge that gap. We will be a committed partner to this in the future. Just this last week, one of my department heads who gets a fairly livable wage is seeking retirement, needs a rental housing complex for a few months or for a few years, contacted a home that just become available on the market within the last week. Upon contacting the owner, was told that the house was just rented out and that the house received 41 applications. That's the type of need that we're looking at in the city of Albert Lea and all throughout southeast Minnesota.
Thank you very much. Mr. Adams, when you buy tires, you live in Albert Lea?
Yes, I do.
When you buy tires, where do you buy them from?
I try to mix it up and change it around a little bit.
Careful now.
Yep. Try to support the local community, community.
I've heard there's only one place in Albert Lea to buy tires.
There's a couple others.
Ooh, that's harsh. That is harsh. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
I am Dr. Mike Funk. I'm the superintendent of the Albert Lea Area School District.
Home of the Mighty Tigers?
Roger that.
Do they still have a pretty good wrestling team?
We do.
Okay, I think you guys eat nails for breakfast. I mean you're...
And we spit them out, too, Mr. Chair.
State champs? So, yeah, okay. Dr. Funk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I do buy my tires from Hanson Tire, by the way, in Albert Lea, just for your information. And you're aware of this from media reports, from, I'm sure, discussions of the legislature. There is a teacher shortage issue in the state of Minnesota. And we in Albert Lea are facing a perfect storm. We have a teacher shortage issue, and we have a significant housing issue for our new teachers in Albert Lea. And because Albert Lea is a, you know, we are funded by taxpayers, we are not, we don't have the pockets of a Rockefeller to build housing for our teachers. And we have individuals come into town who can't find places to live. It's embarrassing when we hire a new teacher, and our starting salary for new teachers is one of the highest in southern Minnesota, $41,000 a year, okay, for a new teacher for the Albert Lea public school system. They come to town with their mom and their dad, and they look at some of the rental units in town, and mom and dad says, this is not safe for my son or daughter to live in this town. We're going to go have them live in Austin. We're going to go have them live in Owatonna. And so how do you think that impacts the school district from a retention angle when we have teachers move into town, there's a shortage already, and there's no housing for them? Because as the city administrator just testified, there hasn't been, with the exception of this past year, new market rate housing for years and years and years in outstate Minnesota. So we are in desperate straits as a school district with the shortage issue we're facing statewide, and now we have a housing issue for our new teachers. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'm kind of familiar with that area. I taught school back way back in Ellendale, Geneva, home of the Mighty Raiders. Back then, now they're not even there anymore, are they?
They are consolidated with New Richland. That's correct.
What's their name?
Nurhag.
Yeah, Nurhag. What team name, though? It used to be New Richland Cardinals. Why don't you look it up? We got to look that one up.
I think it is the Cardinals. It might be the Cardinals.
That was New Richland, so I don't think they carried that name over. So New Richland, Ellendale, Geneva, Heartland, Hope, all
the points.
What is it?
It's the Knights.
Probably Wagner, Minnesota Gophers.
She plays for the Gophers.
Yeah, Knights. Okay. Yeah, she's really good. Okay. With that being said, questions for, well, no, let's get the rest of the testimony so we get in before the end of the committee here. Mr. Carlson, if you could join us here, please.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities.
And welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to thank Representative Hamilton for introducing this bill. This has been an issue, an economic development issue that has been very important for cities across the state, and our League of Cities that represents 835 cities across the state adopted a policy supporting not only the grant program that was introduced in 2014 and extended in 2015. We support the TIF provisions that are in your tax bill right now, Mr. Chair, as another tool for cities to use to encourage workforce housing development, and we also support the bill before you today, 3841. You know, essentially, I think you've heard some great stories today about the importance of this issue. It really is an economic development issue, though. Our businesses across the state are trying to expand. We have workers that are driving, honestly, 20, 30, 40, 50 miles because they can't find housing in the communities where the businesses are expanding. So we think that this would be another great tool to encourage and fill the void that is occurring in the financing of these workforce housing properties. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would just stand for any questions, but just want to reiterate that our statewide organization thinks this is an important issue for the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Why don't we get that chair, and let's get Mr. Dorman up here because we're going to go to member questions. Was there anyone else from the audience wish to testify? Mr. Carlson, why don't you grab one there, too? They might have questions for you. Yes, sir. Mr. Adams.
Yes, I'd just like to make one last comment. We've had employers from all across Albert Lea, large employers, including our hospital in Albert Lea, and our chief administrative officer was planning on coming to testify today to this very issue. Our manufacturing industrial sector, we talked about the school district, a lot of mid-sized employers as well, all seeing the same problem. And our local brokers and realtor offices are being contacted every day for market rate rental houses, and there just is not that supply. So I just wanted to add that to the record. Thank you.
Thank you. And to correct the record, it's the Nurhag Panthers.
Panthers.
Just Panthers. Just for the record. Okay.
Yeah, I thought so, too.
Okay, that one I actually didn't know, but I will never forget it now. Okay. So, questions for anyone that's at the front table here? I think you did a great job. Mr. Dorman, Carlson, Dr. Funk, and Mr. Adams, thank you so much. And thank you, Chairman Hamilton, for bringing these ideas forward. So that, Representative Carlson.
I was just going to make a quick comment. You know, this whole issue of workforce housing is extremely important, as another Mr. Carlson just testified. We had a building that went up in my district a short time ago geared toward workforce housing, and it literally filled up almost immediately. And in fact, there were a number of people then that were on their waiting list that just didn't have the opportunity. I was going to comment, I did teach at one time in southern Minnesota 50 years ago. That dates me a little bit. But we actually
Charles
had...
Saints?
You know, remembered the town.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And at any rate, I would have been hard-pressed to remember. This was 50 years ago. But at any rate, we had kind of the flip. They were going through a debate on school consolidation. And one plan had the school in St. Charles, which then was, they were very supportive of it. And then another plan was going to have the school halfway between St. Charles and Lewiston. And I was always interested in government and politics, so I went to the school board meeting when they were debating that, and I heard a phrase that I'd never heard before or since, but people from St. Charles then were testifying that they would no longer be able to keep a teacher. And what they meant was that there were a number of people in town that rented rooms and so on to teachers, and some of the rooms maybe fit into that general category you were talking about that maybe weren't the most desirable. I ended up with a nice one. It certainly wasn't a safety issue because it was a small town, but some of the facilities were somewhat lacking, let me put it that way. But at any rate, that never happened, and they built the school in St. Charles in the end, the consolidation. But it did show me, because I grew up in the metro area, how important some of those issues are, too, to the local economy and who gets to provide the housing and so on. Where I happened to rent was a retired woman that had a large house in town, and she had three renters, and that was in these small apartments that had been kind of carved out of that big old house, but that was a very important part of her income as well. And therefore, actually, it was my landlord that used the phrase, keep a teacher. But that's what she meant. But anyway, it's this whole workforce housing question is my main point, is an extremely important one.
Thank you, Chair Carlson. Chair Earhart.
I wasn't going to say anything more about this subject, Mr. Chairman, but when you talked about teachers not being able to find housing, I can tell you the same thing exists in my city. And that's why I'm saying, in order to build workforce housing, we have to subsidize it. And we, one of the methods we use is TIF. But that's a double hit on the city and the rest of the people there. And in addition to that, we actually are exporting dollars to pay for you guys, outstate and wherever. And that may be all right, but how about helping us out build workforce housing, too, besides double there should be included in some of this. I just thought I'd mention that again.
Edina Hornets?
Yeah.
Hornets, yeah, okay. Okay, with that, other questions for the author of the bill, Chair Hamilton, or other testifiers? You have the last word then, Chair Hamilton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I appreciate the dialogue. I really do. Obviously, there's a need all across the state. We're looking for solutions here. This happens to focus on greater Minnesota. And I simply ask for your consideration and your support. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, and thank you, Chair Hamilton and Mr. Dorman, Dr. Funk, Mr. Adams, and Mr. Carlson. Members, tomorrow we're talking about the Sanders bill, the soccer stadium. So with that, oh yes, so I will move that House File 3841 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Is there anything else for the good of the order? Chair Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just a quick question. You just used the phrase the omnibus tax bill, and at the beginning of the session you indicated to the committee you weren't sure if there would be one. What is the roadmap today as we move into next week and are approaching more deadlines and so on to get the bills over to Ways and Means? And
well, that is a very good question. I wish I had an answer, and I will let the committee know as soon as I know something. I don't at this point. I have visited with the governor and Department of Revenue, and the challenge will be to get something through the off the House floor that doesn't stand up for 6 days of amendments. That's, I'll be right up front. That's what I'm concerned about. If leadership can come to some agreements on certain issues, and I think Representative Dabney, Chair Dabney, had a very important one, the short sales. Huge issue that I would hope we could all agree on. So that's kind of where we're at now. I have no updates, but like I said, I've had two meetings with the governor and a lot of meetings with the Department of Revenue. So it's going to go fast when it goes, but we don't know how it's going yet. And so hopefully in a short period of time, I'm hoping we get the conference committee rolling again once we get the tax committee work done, and it's still to be determined.
Mr. Chair Chairman, Carlson. If you don't know, you can imagine where those of us in the minority are concerned. I mean, we...
Well, there's a lot of time at Chair
Carlson. We don't have any idea, and it sounds like you don't either. So, okay. Thank you.
At this point, but I will let this committee know as soon as we know something what the path will be, because I'm going to need your help on it. So, with that, good government all the time. We're adjourned.